Now, I understand they're recording us, so I should say for them that this is Richard Swanson. We're talking about origin stories, and it is the 10th of June in 2008, as near as I can tell. Now, that fulfills all righteousness. So, on we go. First thing, very first thing, thank you again for the privilege of thinking with you. I like teaching like I like breathing, and I like it because it is a gift that allows me to think with people who think hard. So your presence here is a gift to me. Thank you. We're going to mess with some things that I have found fascinating for a long time. We're going to mess with some things that occasionally I even nearly understand, but we're going to very frequently mess with things about which I know, we know, anybody knows only a very little. That means that we ought at the outset be very clear that this enterprise requires considerable humility. That doesn't mean timidity, but humility. I'm not particularly timid, and I don't intend to become so. I've lost patience with that. But humility is important. It's important to recognize when you are working out at the edge of things that you know. We are this entire week going to be picking up and playing with stories that come to us from cultures of which I am not a part. Almost all of these are come to us out of languages that I don't know even a single word in. That matters. When we talk about Jewish story, I know the language, I know the feel, I've thought about it a fair amount, I can pretend to have some acquaintance with it. But when we talk about some of these stories, in fact, they are quite foreign to me, and that's why we're reading them. But please recognize that we begin this with humility. We are picking up other people's belongings, the stories that create other people's hearts, and examining them. I do this with some eagerness because this particular course comes out of something that I taught with Martin Brokenleg, a colleague at Augustana some years ago, a course in which we explored the way Native communities protected themselves against aggressive outsiders through the telling of particularly origin stories. Martin and I traveled with a bunch of students from Augustana to the American Southwest and spent a month on the Navajo and Hopi reservations. And at some points, simply listened to stories that we did not understand. When we begin, when Martin and I began that process, Martin is full-blooded Lakota, I said that I was very nervous about studying the Hopi story, for instance, because I'm not Hopi, that's fairly obvious, but it's also something that is way out at the edge of anything that I know anything about. And I said, you know, maybe you can do it, but I'm not sure I can. Martin said, I am Lakota. I know less about the Hopi than you do, but we are going there to ask for a gift. And I watched Martin ask again and again for gifts from people that shared their lives, their stories, their understandings with us, simply because we came aware that we didn't know what we were doing. That's what we're doing today. We're coming to this story asking for a gift. Will it be the gift that the Bushongo people get from it? If it is, it would be the weirdest thing on wheels. It's almost certainly not going to be that. We're going there asking for what gift we're able to receive. We'll find out what it is. We're going to take that story and we're going to lay it next to, eventually, the Jewish stories that we know a little bit more about. Out of that, I think, comes also a gift. What gift? I don't know you well enough to know that. So, long preamble, but it matters. This is an occasion for humility. Okay, Here's what I would like to do. I will, in 10 seconds, hand you this. But I would like to ask you that when, I would like to ask that when you receive your copy, you tell us all your name and where you come from to us here. And you can, of course, define that any way you like. Some places you come from are geographical, some places you come from are philosophical. I don't care. Whatever answer is good by you is good by me.
My name is Michael. I'm coming from Seattle.
My name is Jenna, and I'm coming from Holden.
My name is Jack, and I'm coming from Seattle.
My name is Abby, and I'm coming from Holden.
My name is Sue, and I'm coming from Southern Ohio.
Beverly from Ohio.
And I'm Donna, coming from the Arctic in Alaska.
Oh.
I'm Carolyn, and I'm really more like going to Denver, but I'm coming from Denver, I guess.
I'm Iowa, and I'm from Wilmer.
Didn't realize you were from Wilmer. Do you know my aunt and uncle?
You're just about.
Less than Evelyn Swanson?
What?
Less than Evelyn Swanson?
Oh, Evelyn, really well.
Yes, that's my aunt and uncle.
Oh,
this is the weirdest place.
I know, I get it.
As near as I can tell, I may be related to all of you twice. This is very strange.
My name is Nick Martin, and I hail from Portland, Oregon.
I'm Wanda from Florida.
I'm Karen from Southern Village.
Yes, Seattle.
I'm Gail from Portland Village.
I'm Dean from South Australia.
I'm Judy from near Moline, Illinois.
I'm Liz from Liz.
I'm Larry from retirement.
That's a good place to be.
I'm Gundula, and my origin is in Germany.
Where in Germany? I didn't ask her.
East Prussia, which is now Poland.
Yeah.
I'm Marin from Colorado, Denver.
And I'm Paul, and Dr. Brokenleg was one of my history teachers at Augustana. And why did you get him?
I didn't have him.
Yeah. Both had Donish.
Yeah.
Both
yeah.
had Dr. Brokenleg.
Yeah. Okay. And I'm Richard, and I'm from State of Delight, I don't know.
I'm Nate, and I'm stinky right now.
Come on and join us.
Just got back from the run. This is okay, actually, I really do smell. I've been working all day, and I went for a run, so.
What we're going to do initially, though, really does need a circle.
All right.
Come on in.
I went for a run too. You can sit by me.
Hey, did you have a shower?
No, I didn't.
And did I accidentally make the right number? That's really bizarre.
Yeah.
I'll take such serendipitous accidents. What we're going to do is what my actors and I call a read around with this story. It's what we do when we pick up any new text, any new script that we're working on. We read it around. When we're working with my translations, I break my translations into sense units. And everyone reads one sense unit. This story isn't written that way. So what we'll do is everyone reads until they hit a punctuation mark. That means that some people will read a single word, however, and then the next person goes on. It sometimes is the most god-awful thing you ever heard. It sometimes doesn't work at all. But what it does is get the story into the air out of all of our voices, and it gives us a sense of how the rhythm of the story is laid out in punctuation. Punctuation is really, those are rhythmic markers more than anything else. So what we're going to do is read them around that way. And come on in. Are there any more copies?
We can sign. Share.
Okay.
I can run upstairs and make a sheet.
Oh, that'd be terrific.
We can share.
And if you can wheel into the circle somehow, we're reading around in a circle, and that just works better for the yes.
Yeah.
Okay,
I can share.
Nice to have a circle. What we're doing is reading until you hit punctuation. We're going to go this way around the circle. In the first part especially, you'll notice that I've copied from my marked up text, and so some of the punctuation is buried under layers of, well, purple ink, among other things. That means that if you think there's a punctuation mark, stop. If you don't think there's one, keep going. And if you're right, heck of a deal. If you're wrong, who cares? But what I'd like is, I'd like to go through this story three times. We're going to go all the way around. And the first time through, I want everybody to read their words quickly. Of course, it's possibly ridiculous and not so fast anyone can understand. I don't want that. But I don't want anyone to emote. I want everyone just to say the words quickly so that we can zip this story around as fast as it can go. And I want you to try to pick up the cues from the person next to you so that when you're reading your line, Carolyn is ready to leap in so that before his voice stops, you start. Now, will that always work?
No.
But try to jump in as quickly as you can so that there's no dead air. First time through, I just want it quick. Second time through, if you would, try to make it big. I want it still to go fast, but if you would, say the lines with something like emotion, either really loud or really soft, or really anything you want. It doesn't have to make any sense at all. I just want it to kind of move up and down the emotional scale a little bit. Third time around, same thing, got to be quick, but this time try to pick up on emotion that's coming towards you. So that if starting over at, I've lost your name,
Judy.
Starting at Judy, it's starting to whisper and it's getting quieter and quieter and quieter. Maybe when it gets to Nate, it explodes! Just so that you're building on what's going on. Okay? Three times, fast, big, and somehow connected. And if when we get to connected, you can't figure out what to do, what's coming around the circle with it, you do something else. This is not rocket science. This is just fun. Okay, here we go. In the beginning.
Sorry.
Yep. In the beginning.
In the dark.
There was nothing but water, and Boomer was alone.
One day, Boomer was in terrible pain.
He retched and strained and vomited up the sun.
After that, the light spread over everything.
The heat of the sun dried up the water until the black edges of the world began to show.
Black sandbanks and reefs could be seen.
Edges of the world began to show, but there were up living things.
Bumba vomited up the moon and then the stars.
And after that, the night had its own light also.
Still, Bumba was in pain.
He strained again, and nine living creatures came forth.
A leopard named Koi Bumba and Bongo Bumba, the crested eagle.
The crocodile. Bounda Bumba, and one little fish named Yo.
Next.
Old Conobumba.
The tortoise. And the Tsetse.
The lightning.
Swift.
Deadly.
Beautiful like the leopard.
Then the white heron.
Nyani Bumba.
Also one beetle. And the goat named Booty. Last of all came forth men.
There were many men, but only one was white like Bumba.
His name was Loki Yimba.
The creatures themselves then created all the creatures.
The heron created all the birds of the earth except the kite.
He did not make the kite.
The crocodile made serpents and the iguana.
The goat produced every beast with horns.
Yo, the small fish,
brought forth all the fish of all the seas and waters.
The beetle created insects.
Then the serpents, in their turn, made grasshoppers.
And the iguana made the creatures without forms.
Then the three sons of Bumba said they would finish the world.
The first. Made the white ants.
But he was not equal to the task.
And died of
the ants.
However, thankful for living and being,
and searching for black earth in the depths of the world, and covered the barren sands very high and created.
Chananga,
the second son.
Brought forth the marvelous living plant from which all trees and grasses and flowers and plants in the world have sprung.
The third son,
Jedi Bumba,
wanted something different.
But for all his trying, made only the bird called the kite.
Of all the creatures,
fighting, was the only troublemaker.
She stirred up so much trouble that Boomba chased her into the sky.
Then Medcat was without fire and told Boomba show the people how to draw fire out of the trees.
There is fire in every tree,
he told them.
And showed them how to make the fire drill and liberate it.
Sometimes today, Tsetse still leaps down and strikes the earth and causes damage.
When the last the work of creation was finished, Boomba walked through the peaceful villages and said to the people,
behold these wonders.
They belong to you.
Thus from Boomba, the creator, the first ancestor,
came forth all the wonders that we see and hold and use.
And all the brotherhood of beasts and men.
On we go, back to the beginning and second lap.
In the beginning.
In the dark.
There was nothing.
But water.
And Boomba was alone.
One day, Boomba was in terrible pain.
He retched and strained and vomited up the sun.
After that, the light spread over everything.
The heat of the sun dried up the water until the black edges of the world began to show.
Black sandbags, banks, and reefs could be seen.
But there were no living things.
Boomba vomited up the moon and then the stars.
And after that night, the night had its own light also.
Still, Boomba was in pain.
He strained again, and nine living creatures came forth.
The leopard named Khoibomba,
and Pongo Boomba, the crested eagle,
the crocodile,
Ganda Boomba,
and one little fish named Yo.
Next,
Ulguna Boomba,
the tortoise,
and Tsetse,
the lightning,
swift,
deadly,
beautiful like the leopard,
then the white heron,
Nyani Bamba,
also one beetle,
and the goat named Booty.
Last of all came forth men.
There were many men,
but only one was white like Boomba.
His name was Lopo Yima.
The creatures themselves then created all the creatures.
The heron created all the birds of the air except the kite.
He did not make the kite.
The crocodile made serpents and the iguana.
The goat produced every beast with horns.
Yo,
the small fish.
But for all the fish of all the seas and waters,
the beetle created insects.
Then the serpents in their turn made grasshoppers.
And the iguana made the creatures without horns.
Then the three sons of Boomba said they would finish the world.
The first,
Nione Nagana,
made the white ants.
But he was not equal to the task.
And died of it.
The ants, however,
thankful for life and being,
went searching for black earth in the depths of the world and covered the barren sands to bury and honor their creator.
Chonganda,
the second son,
brought forth a marvelous living plant from which all the trees and grasses and flowers and plants in the world have sprung.
The third son,
Chidi Boomba,
wanted something different.
But for all his trying, made only the bird called the kite.
All of the creatures,
Tsetse,
lightning,
was the only troublemaker. She stirred up so much trouble that Boomba chased her into the sky.
Then mankind was without fire until Boomba showed the people how to draw fire out of the trees.
There is fire in every tree, he told them.
And showed them how to make the fire drill and liberate it.
Sometimes today, Tsetse still leaps down and strikes the earth and causes damage.
When at last the work of creation was finished,
Boomba walked through the peaceful villages and said to the people,
behold these wonders.
They belong to you.
Thus from Boomba,
the creator,
the first ancestor,
came forth all the wonders that we see and hold and use,
and all the brotherhood of beasts and men.
Last lap. One more time.
In the beginning,
in the dark,
there was nothing but water.
And Boomba was alone.
One day,
Boomba was in terrible pain.
He retched and strained and vomited up the sun.
After that, light spread over everything.
The heat of the sun dried up the water until the black edges of the world began to show. Black sandbanks and reefs could be seen.
But there were no living things.
Boomba vomited up the moon and then the stars.
And after that, the night had its own light.
Still, Boomba was in pain.
He strained again, and nine living creatures came forth.
The leopard named Khoibomba
And Pongo Bumba, the crested eagle.
The crocodile.
Gonda Bumba.
And one little fish named Yo.
Next.
Oh, Kono Bumba.
The tortoise.
And Tsetse, the lightning.
Swift.
Gently.
Beautiful like the leopard.
Then the white heron.
Naira Bumba.
Also one beetle.
And the goat named Bui.
Last of all came forth men. There were many men,
but only one was white like Bumba.
His name was Loko Yima.
Creatures themselves then created all the creatures.
The heron created all the birds of the air except the kite.
He did not make the kite.
The crocodile made serpents and the iguana.
The goat produced every beast with horns.
Yo,
the small fish,
brought forth all the fish of the seas and the waters.
The beetle created insects.
Then the serpents in their turn made grasshoppers, and the iguana made the creatures without horns.
Then the three sons of Bumba said that they would finish the world.
The birds,
Yoni Nagana, made the white ants.
But he was not equal to the task.
And died of it.
The ants, however, thankful for life and being,
went searching for black earth in the depths of the world and covered the barren sands to bury and honor their creator.
Choganda, the second son,
brought forth a marvelous living plant from which all the trees and grasses and flowers and plants in the world have sprung.
The third son,
Chenagumba,
wanted something different.
But for all his trying, made only the bird called the kite.
Of all the creatures,
Tsetse,
lightning,
was the only troublemaker. She stirred up so much trouble that Bumba chased her into the sky.
Then mankind was without fire until Bumba showed the people how to draw fire out of the trees.
There is fire in every tree,
he told them,
and showed them how to make the fire grill and liberate it.
Sometimes today, Tsetse still leaps down and strikes the earth and causes damage.
When at last the work of creation was finished,
Bumba walked through the peaceful villages and said to the people,
behold these wonders.
They belong to you.
Thus, from Bumba,
the creator,
the first ancestor,
came forth all the wonders that we see and hold and use, and all the brotherhood of beasts and man.
So what did you notice? What caught your ear? What caught your eye? What did you hear?
There's no woman.
There is no woman. There is none. It is a strange thing. It may be that if you know the languages, some of the characters, some of the animals have female-coded names, but I don't know the language. There is no obvious female.
I don't
Which
know
will
this...
mess with the notion that this is birth imagery, but we'll have to think about that.
I didn't figure out where the suns came from.
Yes, they just show up, which is sort of the way suns are sometimes. But they do just sort of wander onto the scene and say, we'll finish this up now.
Mm-hmm. So Bumba is white.
Bumba is white. Hmm? And we don't know what that means.
Right, it's the only color or race that is specifically described.
If it's race.
Right.
And it might be. One of the speculations is that this is a post-colonial story, and there is some association of light skin with some sort of technological advance, so the god would be white. But there are, in fact, in Navajo stories and in Hawaiian stories, expectations of characters who are white, but it's not, they are not, but they are pre-colonial contact stories. So this may be that. We don't know which. It is possible that white means purity. Barbara Sproul, the editor, wonders about that. But it's just as likely that white means dead, like the belly of a dead fish. We don't know.
There's death.
Yeah.
In Melanesian cultures, white is often the color of death.
Yes.
And not only of death, but also of the spiritual world. Because mm-hmm. when the Europeans came, they thought that they were their ancestors.
In Navajo stories, those with white skin are cadaverous witches.
Mm.
We don't know which this is. It could be all of these things, and we simply have to invite that range of ideas in and notice that there is a normal blackness to everything except Puma and one human being. What else?
I wonder why
I ran over your hand.
Sorry. In the beginning, in the dark, there was nothing but water.
Yes.
Water and Bumba are the only two beings or entities that exist before everything else.
And there's something interesting about that. There was nothing but water, but then Bumba is there alone.
Yeah.
So the storyteller could have said, in the beginning, in the dark, there was nothing but water and Bumba. But Bumba isn't a character inside this world, perhaps. Bumba is the story out of which the world comes, or something. But somehow you can say there's nothing but water and still have Bumba there alone.
Yeah. You even say that there's just darkness, too.
Yes. Yes.
Darkness, water, and Bumba.
Mm-hmm. Because darkness is a thing here.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What else?
And Bumba didn't create everything.
Yes.
His creations created more things.
This is a world in which Bumba creates some things, his sons try to create some things, and they succeed every now and again. But everything that's brought into being is generative in this world.
Well, it said that Bumba was alone, but the way they described Bumba bringing forth, vomiting up the sun because he was in terrible pain and he retched, it's not like Bumba was one. It doesn't feel like Bumba was wanting to change that he was alone. It just seems that this came out of terrible pain, which, like Linda Simba said yesterday, is kind of a metaphor for birth.
Yeah, great.
But,
now, let's think about that. I work with actors, therefore the first question that I ask my troupe always is, so how could you say that? How could you do that? Let's suppose that the aloneness is in fact a very good aloneness. As a storyteller, how would you do those first lines? If this isn't a, he was so lonely, it was just like seventh grade all over again. What if it isn't loneliness? What if it is a solitary wholeness? How would you say it?
Serene.
Let's hear it.
And Bumba was alone.
Yeah. In the beginning, in the dark, there was nothing but water. And Bumba was alone. Yeah. Now, if that's what's going on, then the retching and vomiting enters the story as all of a sudden out of nowhere. And oddly enough, out comes production. Out comes the sun, out comes, finally everything. How would you say that? If
in the beginning it was dark, there was nothing but water, and Bumba was alone.
And then?
One day Bumba was in terrible pain.
Yeah. If the terrible pain and the vomiting is an erupting surprise, Bumba is alone and serene. And the vomiting enters as, oh my goodness, if there was 911, I would call that, but Bumba's alone, and so it won't do a perfect lot of good. How would you do the line? Someone want to try? How would that sound? It looks like there's something cooking here. Someone want to try?
I'll try.
Okay.
One day, Bumba was in terrible pain. He retched and strained and vomited up the sun.
Yes. It's like, who knew?
You almost want to add a but there. Bumba was alone, but one day.
Oh. Yes. One day. Can you do the whole scene up to that point?
In the beginning, in the dark, there was nothing but water. Bumba was alone. But one day, Bumba was in terrible pain. He retched and strained and vomited up the sun.
Nice. Thank you. What else do you know? notice about this story?
They get to send their bad guys up into the sky.
Yes. 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 And that's an interesting place to put bad guys. They're not sent into a far land. They're not sent. They're, in fact, sent to inhabit that which is over all of us.
But it wasn't a bad guy. It was a bad woman.
Yeah.
Saint was she.
That's right.
The troublemaker.
And she's sent away, which may explain the absence of females in the rest. This may be a world that creates female as troublemaker.
But she was lightning.
Yeah, alchemizes pain and the beauty.
What's that?
It alchemizes pain and the beauty.
Yes. Yes. Oh. Oh. Oh, that's fascinating, because she is the only beautiful creature. Is that right in the story? Swift and deadly and beautiful like the leopard. There was only one troublemaker. Tsetse, lightning, swift, deadly, beautiful like the leopard. What's it mean that the troublemaker dwells above us in this world created by this story?
That trouble is always imminent.
Trouble is always close. Yeah.
And you didn't know when to expect it.
And you don't know when to expect it. And you were saying?
Or could strike at any time.
Yes. Because if trouble were sent into a far country, trouble is going to have to traverse land and sea to get back here. And presumably you would get reports from your relatives who would call you and tell you trouble's on the way. But here, trouble in fact lurks invisible in the sky that is equally close to every place.
Last year's fire was stopped by lightning.
Oh, how so?
Right? Last year's fire was stopped by lightning.
Oh. Mm-hmm. And this is maybe a world that knows that kind of intervention.
What else? I think it's curious that the heron couldn't make the kite, could make every other bird, but not the kite.
Yeah.
What's up with him?
What is the kite? It's a bird of prey, isn't it?
Yes.
It's what?
It's a bird of prey. So the heron can make all kinds of good birds, but the kite is a bit iffy. Mm-hmm. And the heron didn't make that one.
Yeah.
And then the son, the third son did make the kite. That's all he could make, though.
And wanted to make something different.
Yeah.
And tried and tried, but succeeded only in making a bird of prey.
Is there anything in this culture about a kite? Does it have any stories of its own?
In any culture, everything has its stories, but I do not know them in this culture. I only notice that the kite stands apart and is the sole production. The heron succeeds in making everything except the kite. The sun tries to make something new and different and makes only the kite.
When you're inventing a wheel, it takes you longer. So, and also, speaking as a person who always wanted to produce something different,
yes.
A lot of times all you make is a mess.
Oh, so maybe this is a story that creates also the creative mess and recognizes that in fact you make an awful lot of mess before you make a poem. You make an awful lot of word salad before you ever make a story.
I was thinking that maybe it is a society which is fairly restrictive about people's behavior.
Okay.
And there are a lot of admonitions against behavior that the rest of the tribe doesn't engage in. And
where do you hear that?
Huh?
Where do you hear that?
I hear that in that. He tried to, he didn't want to do what everybody else was doing, and all he made was a mess.
Patricia, it's a little bit like Madness this morning, the last paragraph. It all sort of comes together and works out in a peaceful way. Like you said this morning about the things that had happened in your life with your son or getting lost in the bog, that it all came together, and even the surgery for your dog, you know. All was okay, isn't it?
It was, but I also caught him that isn't the way it's always going to be with
us. Okay.
seems true.
That I'm, sometimes things are easier than you think, but you know, don't get the way that this, don't get the idea that this is the rest of the way, the way the rest of your life is going, or you're likely to be disillusioned with God.
Mm. What do you make of the way the story ends? Carolyn, go ahead for me.
I was going to say something different.
Go ahead. Let's go there first.
It's looking like some of the animals create animals that they would eat. I mean, like the crocodile makes serpents and the iguana, and I'm guessing probably the crocodile would eat serpents and iguana, perhaps. And the small fish brought forth all the fish of the seas and waters. So if the small fish brought forth the bigger fish, probably the bigger fish
would eat
the
creator.
Small fish. And the serpents make grasshoppers, and I would guess maybe serpents would eat grasshoppers.
Good.
You know, maybe I'm reading too much into it, but like it's reverse, you know.
Yeah.
The animals of prey seem to be producing their prey.
And it's sort of cross-mixed, because in the case of one little fish named Yo,
right,
which is the weirdest refrain in this thing.
And to me, kite means something not living, where all of the other animals are living.
Ah.
I didn't even assume it was a bird.
This one is a bird.
It is a bird.
Yeah, this one is indeed a bird of prey.
Okay.
But
is it a particularly fearsome bird of prey, or is it different from other birds of prey?
As I know it, not particularly fearsome, other than raptors or rafters.
Okay.
I'm trying to remember, is it a bird hawk?
Kite.
Yeah, a kite.
I don't remember.
No. What's that?
It's a predatory kind of bird, isn't it?
Yeah. I think it's a bird hawk, but I'm not sure. I don't think it's a fish hawk. But it is a raptor, and therefore glorious in its own right. Do you know the Robinson Jeffers poem, Bird Hawks? Oh, find that. I would, accepting the penalties, sooner kill a man than a hawk. Robinson Jeffers has his own problems, but he sees a nobility in a raptor that maybe could be part of this story, too.
I was also wondering what the ants were up to.
Yes.
But
yes.
Something to do with bearing and honoring their creator.
I thought that was wonderful.
Yeah.
You
yes,
know, that their creator, that he wasn't up to the task, and so they honored him, and they're so grateful and thankful that they buried him with them to death.
Yes. What's that do to this story? This is an origin story that has the initial creating happen on a terrible pain and retching. But out of that comes light and all life. And all life having been retched up, nobody retches ever again. And all life gives birth to all other life, and all creatures create. When the sons of Bumba come into the story, they create things, some successfully, but some not. But even failure is honored by the ants. This is an origin story in which failure is inscribed into the story. What's it do to an origin story to say, the first son, Nyani Nana, made the ant, the white ants, but he was not equal to the task and died of it. What's that note add? He was not equal to the task and died of it.
It's rather a matter of fact. It's not a moral kind of judgment. He did something wrong and died, which he just,
he wasn't equal to it.
It feels kind of noble, too, that he pursued it.
Yes.
And to create this, yet he had to die in the process.
Mm-hmm. Oh, boy.
I think that it's interesting that establishing that the creator can die because of the task.
Yes.
They're vulnerable. Our creators are vulnerable. They feel.
In this world.
Yeah.
In this world, the creators can feel terrible pain. They can be inadequate to the task of creating even just white ants, and can die from the effort. They can try with all their might to do something new and different and make a mess and then get a raptor out of it, which is a good deal, but it's just a raptor. failure is inscribed into, the possibility of failure is inscribed into this world and not moralized, simply noticed. What's it mean to be a human being in this story, in a world created by this story? So if stories create worlds, this story creates what it means to be a human being inside this world.
The creators.
How so?
Well, they all seem to be trying to, wanting to create something.
Everything that comes into being seems to want to create something.
Yeah.
So if you are a human being, if you're part of this world, if you're an ant in this world, for Pete's sake, you want to make, you want to create, you want to build, you want to honor, you want to do something. So to be a human being is presumably to also embody that urge to always create. What else?
I think the receivers of a wonderful gift. Love started it and made it, as he said, all for you, or they belong all to you. Belong to you. Sounds like a wonderful place.
Well, it really does. But what do you make of the word belong?
Well, it's connected with brotherhood.
Yes. So it may not be a possessive belonging, but belong.
There's a striking difference between they belong to you and you shall have dominion.
There might be.
Feels
And there surely is in American and Western readings of that story, but it might be that this would be a place to probe that moment in the Genesis story. I'll play with that. That's one place. But what we're going to do is put story on top of story and see what sticks together. And that's one place that they might stick. Bumbo walks to the peaceful villages and said to the people, behold these wonders, they belong to you. That might stick to have dominion, which we'll have to figure out what that might mean. Behold these wonders, they belong to you. Anyone else hear anything in that?
Behold, I have given you in the Genesis story. Is it handing over?
Yes. There is a moment of commission.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That might stick together too. Well, what that'll do to the Genesis story, we'll dig and probe and play a little bit in a couple of minutes here. But what else do you hear in this story? What do you make of the arc of the story?
That whole paragraph about lightning, could somebody edify that for me? She sent off and there was no fire, and then Bumba showed them how to get some fire.
Mm-hmm.
But that she still comes down every now and then and causes trouble. I don't think.
What's that?
To be about that? I don't understand.
What do you hear? Because that's one of the places that fascinates me. What do you all hear?
Mm-hmm.
There was only one troublemaker. Tsetse, lightning, swift, deadly, beautiful as the leopard.
Mm-hmm.
And
she was sent away, and then they had no fire.
Right. The trees in that is a representative of us.
Yes.
There's a fire in all of us.
Yes.
If you want to use the word evil and good, but those commodities.
The story doesn't.
Sometimes.
What's that?
We used to think if we get rid of all the mosquitoes with DDT, the world would be a better place. And now we're finding out that a lot of other creatures depend on the mosquitoes, and that we throw the world out of balance. And so in this story, long before we realize that they have gotten rid of what they perceive as evil, and then suddenly humans have no fire.
What's a human community without fire?
Cold.
Yeah, especially these days. I saw the group of young people headed out for 4 days camping, and I watched it snow yesterday, and I watched it snow today, and I watched the thermometer, and I realized that it was really rather chilly in Chalet 11 last night. And it would be chillier in a thin-walled tent. And I'm wondering, I hope their matches are dry. What's human community without fire? Well, it's hypothermia. It's darn risky. You send the troublemaker away, and you put human community at risk.
Yeah.
What's this story say about the balance of human community? What if troublemaker is, what, troublemaker is the only female character? What if troublemaker is, in fact, all of womankind? That would mean we've got a baritone storyteller on our side. Now we have a baritone storyteller who's willing to say, and if we could just get rid of the women, it would sure be better. At which point the story bites back and says, if you'd like to live without fire, go on ahead and try that, Chuck. This story says, maybe the banishing troublemakers, in fact, makes life impossible. Now, Boomba comes and shows them the fire drill, but until Boomba does that, they spend at least enough time for Boomba to notice. He may not be the most attentive of deities. They spend enough time without fire, cold and eating raw meat, which works great for a while, but human beings like things warm.
Can you really get fire out of a tree?
Rubbing the chopsticks down.
But notice how they think of fire.
Yeah,
fire is something that's liberated. I'll let you talk.
Well, no, it's interesting to me that fire is one of the, I mean, at the beginning of the story it says Boomba strains and 9 living creatures come forth, and one of them is lightning. So that lightning, or like the beginning of fire, is a character, and that's banished. And then they want to bring it back and domesticate it, but even when they domesticate it, they see it as liberating something that has its own will. So you have to liberate it from the tree, so they don't ever like claim to have fully domesticated this thing because it has its own being.
And it takes a great deal of work to liberate it from the tree.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you've made fire with a fire drill. It's something you get good at, I understand, but I'm not there. It takes well-made tools, it takes practice, and it takes persistence. What do you make of the narrative arc of this story? Aristotle says a proper story has a beginning, a middle, and an end. And that means that the beginning, in fact, implies, for Aristotle, the beginning is the explosion in which all of the energy in a story that's ever going to be needed is sent spiraling out into the universe. And the end, for Aristotle, is this huge, humongous magnet that reaches out and grabs the energy at the proper moment and yanks it toward the end. Best way to understand it is, so we all watch television at least sometimes in our lives. You probably have watched American crime dramas on television. There is an opening murder, and there is a criminal on the loose. And what do? You find that out about at 10 after the hour. At 20 after the hour, what are they doing? What are they doing at 20 after? Commercial. Commercial. There's always commercial, and it's in usually 10-minute blocks. And just before the commercial, they're looking, they're hunting, they're gathering data. Half past, they have some hypotheses. 22, they have a character identified who is surely the bad guy, and they leave the children in the care of the best guy in the whole story, and they race across town to catch the bad guy. And where is the bad guy?
The children.
With the children. Because at that moment in the story, you haven't had the end reach out and grab all the energy and yank it toward itself. That happens at 10-2 in American crime dramas. That's when the magnet of the end reaches out and makes an arc of everything that's been racing into the universe and pulls it to the end and settles it. How does this story get pulled to the end and settled? Where does it start? How does it get there? Where does it land?
I think it goes from a static situation to another reasonably static situation that is a step up from the original, and that you've got a lot more characters than you originally had. But you have the dark, nothing but water, and Boomba alone, and then the terrible pain interrupts that, and then at the end, with a lot more,
the work of the creation was finished, and Bumba walked through the peaceful village and said, here it all is.
And so one sketch of the ark is, it starts from stasis. Everything's at rest, but there's nothing there except water. And after the whole ark, it's at rest again, but it's now a populated world. Well, how else would you sketch the ark?
Bumba was alone. At the end, there's community.
So you have alone, and now you have peaceful village, which says community that works. Hmm? Very nice. How else?
You start with water, and then you end with land or earth, or
yes,
where people live and the animals live. And the
yes,
grow.
And the whole story progressively makes dry land and the population for the dry land, and then black earth that buries the inadequate creator but makes crops possible, and therefore you can have a village. So the gratitude of the ants is what makes the fertility, that makes the
so he was good fertilizer.
Yes, which finally is a one. My father's an ag teacher. I aspire to be really good fertilizer when I'm done.
There's
what other arcs?
Retching and vomiting and pain, and then there's peace.
Yes, the story starts with and ends with Bumba walking through the peaceful villages. Mm-hmm. And that transformation. In any story, in any scene, you look for transformation. Each one of these is a transformation. But that is one that I find particularly striking. I work with troops of actors, and when we worked with this story, we have generally done this with an actor who simply embodied the story and another who spoke it. And that puts the actor who embodies the story on her hands and knees, vomiting at the beginning, which is an incredibly painful thing to watch, but that's where the story starts. And out of that exhausting, frightening, horrible experience, finally comes rest, and the pain is gone. This is a fascinating arc to a story. Now, I'm going to read to you a bit from Genesis 1. And what I'd like to ask you to do is to listen for Bumba here. I cannot imagine caring less about which story is true. And how in the world is that our province? I can't imagine caring less than I do about which one we like. What I would like you to hear is, if this were Bumba Vomits the World, what pieces would pop out, okay? Let's imagine that we have not Genesis 1, 7-day creation, followed by Genesis 2, 1-day creation. Let's imagine we have Bumba Vomits the World as Genesis 1, and the story I'm going to read to you as the next story that creates the world. What do you hear in Genesis 1 that sounds like Bumba? Okay? Just see. And the answer in a couple of minutes may be not a blasted thing. Well, okay, but listen and see if you can hear anything that echoes for you. In the beginning, when God created the heavens and the earth was a formless void, and darkness covered the face of the deep, while the wind from God swept over the face of the waters. Then God said, let there be light, and there was light. And God saw that the light was good. And God separated the light from the darkness, and God called the light day, and the darkness he called night, and there was evening, and there was morning, the first day. And God said, let there be a dome in the midst of the waters, and let it separate the waters from the waters. So God made the dome and separated the waters that were under the dome from the waters that were above the dome. And it was so. God called the dome sky, and there was evening, and there was morning, the second day. And God said, let the waters under the sky be gathered together into one place, and let the dry land appear. And it was so. God called the dry land earth. And the waters that were gathered together he called seas. And God saw that it was good. Then God said, let the earth put forth vegetation, plants yielding seed, and fruit trees of every kind on earth that bear fruit with the seed in it. And it was so. The earth brought forth vegetation, plants yielding seed of every kind, and trees of every kind bearing fruit with the seed in it. And God saw that it was good. And there was evening, and there was morning, the third day. And God said, let there be lights in the dome of the sky to separate the day from the night, and let them be for signs and for seasons and for days and years. And let them be light. Let there be lights in the dome of the sky to give light upon the earth. And it was so. God made the two great lights, the great light, greater light to rule the day, and the lesser light to rule the night and the stars. God set them in the dome of the sky to give light upon the earth, to rule over the day and over the night, and to separate the light from the darkness. And God saw that it was good. And it was evening and it was morning, the fourth day. And God said, let the waters bring forth swarms of living creatures, and let birds fly above the earth across the dome of the sky. So God created great sea monsters, and every living creature that moves of every kind with which the waters swarm, and every winged bird of every kind. And God saw that it was good. God blessed them, saying, be fruitful and multiply, and fill the waters and the seas, and let birds multiply on the earth. And it was evening, and it was morning, the fifth day. And God said, let the earth bring forth living creatures of every kind, cattle and creeping things, and wild animals of the earth of every kind. And it was so. God made the wild animals of the earth of every kind, and the cattle of every kind, and everything that creeps upon the ground of every kind. And God saw that it was good. Then God said, let us make humankind in our image, according to our likeness. And let them have dominion over the fish of the sea, and over the birds of the air, and over the cattle, and over all the wild animals of the earth, and over every creeping thing that creeps upon the earth. So God created humankind in his image, and in the image of God he created them, male and female he created them. God blessed them and said to them, be fruitful and multiply, and fill the earth and subdue it, and have dominion over the fish of the sea, and over the birds of the air, and over every living thing that moves upon the earth. God said, see, I have given you every plant yielding seed that is upon the face of all the earth, and every tree with seed in its fruit, you shall have them for food. And to every beast of the earth, and to every bird of the air, and to everything that creeps upon the earth, everything that has the breath of life, I have given every green plant for food. And it was so. God saw everything that he had made, and indeed, it was very good. And there was evening, and there was morning, the sixth day. Thus the heavens and the earth were finished, and all their multitudes, and all of it. And on the seventh day, God finished the work that he had done, and he rested on the seventh day from all the work that he had done. So God blessed the seventh day and hallowed it, because on it God rested from all the work that he had done in creation. If Bumba is the model, what pops up?
Okay. Chaos in the kitchen.
Okay. Thanks for coming.
In the beginning.
In the beginning. Both stories start with the same phrase.
Darkness.
Darkness.
Water.
And
light.
Water. Both of these worlds need beginnings and darkness and water to come into being.
What else?
The Creator's mouth is somehow the source.
Yes. Oh, very nice. In one case, it's retching, but it is still proceeding from the mouth. Which says something about the significance of face in both of these story worlds. Oh, I've been reading these stories for years. I never thought about that. Thank you. What else?
And the word dominion, and
yes.
They belong to you.
Yes. Well, if these two stories sat next to each other, and they do now, we would have to figure out what belonging and dominion have to do with each other. I remember when I was a kid, my mother's father was a carpenter, and my father believed that it was important for every child to learn how to use tools. And so to be like Grandpa, I got to use my father's tools sometimes. And then one day my father said, I think you're old enough to have your own tools. And so he gave me one of his hammers. And I remember getting my own hammer. He said, now this belongs to you. And I was hammering, building something in the backyard. And I left my hammer out there. And it rained and it rusted. And when my father picked it up and said, how could you do this to a tool? I said, it belongs to me. He said, not anymore, it doesn't. belong can mean I can waste it and rust it, but not with tools, says my father. If in the Boomba story, belong means you can waste it and rust it, then belong means what I thought it meant as an immature kid. Years later, I learned that if a tool belongs to you, you owe it care. Maybe that's what they belong to you means. What does dominion mean? Well, we know what it's meant in Western culture. It's not so very pretty. But I hear in this, my dad's an ag teacher. My dad became an ag teacher because he believed in his heart that a hungry world needs food and fiber. And it is therefore a human responsibility to raise food and fiber to feed and clothe children who would otherwise not be fed or clothed. And you don't do that by hunting and gathering. You do it by tending the soil and caring for it like I should have cared for my hammer. Perhaps they could mean the same thing, but we do have to notice that the history of Western culture looks more like me and my hammer than my father in food and fiber.
Then I'm going to go back to the word brother.
Yes.
The same thing.
Because brotherhood says something that maybe Genesis 1 needs to hear. Can you hear brotherhood in Genesis 1? If Boomba tells you to look for it, can you find it?
I don't know, but my father is a avocation was a carpenter, and he gave my brother and I hammers, and my brother took his hammer and hit me on the head. I don't know if that's the brotherhood. Maybe that's the brotherhood of Western culture. I don't hold him responsible for that anymore.
I'm not bitter.
Well, God calls everything good in Genesis 1. Everything is good.
And in the Hebrew, it's even cooler. Because in the Hebrew, and God saw ki tov. Now that means God saw that it was good. Yeah. But ki tov is what you say when you have just tasted a mouthful of food that is so good that it makes you cry. Have you ever had that meal? My wife and I and my sister and her husband were traveling in France for our shared 25th anniversaries. We sort of averaged when we came out at 25. It was our 26th, their 24th. That's 25, close enough. We wandered into this crummy-looking little restaurant in Bourgogne. Unpromising, but it was the only place that we could find when we were hungry. We walked in, we sat down, we ordered our food. Before the food came, they brought us a little dish with a single snail in it. Now, I do love escargot. My brother-in-law thinks it tastes like rubber boot. Five buckle over certain things. We hadn't ordered snail. And so we said to the server, you know, and she said, it's a gift from the chef. We picked it up and put it in our mouth. And everybody's eyes got whites all the way around, because it was the single best mouthful of food I've ever had in my life. And then came the first course, and that was better than that. And then came the second course, and that was better than that. That is what ki tov means. Who was talking to me last night? Bernstein's Mass.
Yeah.
Chichester Psalms.
How does he translate it?
Damn, I'm good.
Yes, that's what ki tov means. This story has God looking and saying, damn, that's good. God tastes and says, oh my goodness, I didn't know food could do that. Maybe in that is brotherhood. Yeah, we still have to notice what Western culture has done with that. But ki tov says, notice. Okay, we are out of time, and in fact I've used 7 more minutes of your life. Thank you so much for reading with me and playing with me.